Good evening, everyone. I'm Pam Stack, your host, and this is Authors on the Air. We're proud to be part of the Authors on the Air Global Radio Network. Tonight, I have a very special guest. When Joshua Hood's first book came out, Clear by Fire, the publisher sent me a note and said, you really have to read this book and read the story about this author. He is a military hero. He says he's not, but he is. He's highly decorated for his valor in Operation Furious Pursuit. He is also a member of a SWAT team in Memphis, Tennessee. But particularly his book, Clear by Fire, was so amazingly well written that I signed up immediately to have him on the show. We had a great time. We've stayed friends since then, but now Joshua has a new book out, Warning Order. It is the second book in his Search and Destroy thriller. I'm so happy to have Josh Hood on the show with me. Josh, welcome back to Authors on the Air. How are you, my friend?
I'm great, and like I said earlier, it always feels like I'm coming home when I get to come back on the show. It's one of the things I look forward to, especially when this book came out. As soon as you signed on to have me back on the show, it was very exciting.
Well, you know that I'll always have you on here. I love your writing, and but here's the funny thing. You know, I don't remember what we talked about last time, except I know we had a good time. And we talked a lot about your military service. You were with the 82nd Airborne, whom I have always admired greatly. I know you were a team leader when you were over there in Iraq, and I know that when you came home, you decided – you were in Iraq and Afghanistan, I should say. You decided to stay with kind of a policing thing and join the SWAT team in Memphis, where you worked across the board with a whole bunch of different alphabet agencies like FBI, ATF, DEA, Secret Service, the Marshals, and everything else. I think that's really cool. But, you know, it occurs to me that I never did find out about your love of reading, because you are really a very big reader, aren't you?
Well, yeah, that's something that I've always enjoyed, you know, and I think it naturally led to writing and the attempt to you know, try to emulate what it inspired you so much. And like we were talking earlier, I think we both read voraciously, and thank God for the Kindle, because I was running out of bookshelves before that came out.
I hear you. That's true. I understand that, except your books are in paper on my bookshelf. Sorry. I've got you in Kindle on the shelves, too. And one of these days when you and I meet in person, you will sign my books for me, right?
Right. Well, you know, one of the dreams that I have is to move down to Florida. It's just something about being in Florida. I don't know, especially, you know, the northern part and the parts, you know, obviously by the coast, is just something. There's an energy there, I guess. It's just, you know, from the elements or, you know, whatever. But every time I'm up in the Tallahassee area, it feels like there's just primeval energy. Like you just want to write like a crime thriller for some reason.
You know, it's interesting you say that. Florida is, for all its faults and for all its natural beauty, has an abundance of very, very famous and excellent writers. There are a lot of authors who come here, whether they live here full-time or they are here during the wintertime, because I will tell you right now, it's exceptionally hot. It's 100 degrees out. The humidity is miserable, and this is our rainy season. So you really wouldn't want to be here. But I understand the need to be in Florida. It's a really cool place to live if you land in the right spot. So I'm hoping that'll happen, and I'm hoping that, you know, we'll be somewhat neighbors. You might be on the East Coast while I'm on the West, but that would be really cool. Getting back to books, what kind of books did you like to read?
Well, growing up, actually one of my earliest memories was my dad, who's an artist, reading The Hobbit to me. And I don't really remember how old I was. I was probably around 4 or 3, because my younger brother hadn't been born yet. And I remember, like, you know, back then, like, I was born in 79, which you know, I'm not that old, but compared to, you know, now where you have these tablets and you have social media and TV and all this other distractions, you know, people used to sit around and, at least in my house, we used to sit down and read. You know, we didn't have a TV until I was about 16 or so, and I remember being captivated right off, and my dad still tells a story that every time in the book we would come across the word adventure, I would raise my little finger and be like, there's that word again. And, you know, I guess it was something that was instilled in me early on, the respect for literature and the stories and the places it can take you. And so I grew up obviously reading the classics, and you know, my dad never really, and my mom's a big reader too, but, you know, they never kind of dumbed it down. It was never like See Spot Run or whatever. It was always, you know, growing up being, you know, up until I was 7 or 8, you know, reading Robert Louis Stevenson and, you know, people like that.
Glorious.
The Count of Monte Cristo. And so I learned early on about these great books and, you know, the kind of the history and the legend behind these books. And so while other people were, you know, I guess talking about movies and things like this, I was trying to, you know, read books that were ahead of me. Like I remember reading Moby Dick and things like this and finding these great stories, these great, you know, classical stories.
Adventures.
That were just so rich.
Adventures. Yes.
Right.
Yes. Well, you're right. They do take you. Books do take you to another world, and you get invested in them. And good on your dad for doing that for you, because I think that children who read or are read to have such a terrific childhood that way. They learn imagination, and they daydream, and wonderful things happen to children who read. You know, it instills a kind of confidence in, I think, in a child that you don't get from any other activity. So, which leads me to something. You said your father is an artist. So creativity runs in your family. Is your mom a creative also?
She is kind of creative, I guess, more, you know, she's from Texas. And so people from the South have this natural storytelling ability. So growing up, you know, she would tell me these stories about her growing up in Texas and, you know, her grandmother and things that they did. And so, you know, that's another bonus of living in the South that you don't have, or you don't see that many places. The, you know, the rich tradition of, like, you know, the oral tradition, you know, kind of that came from Ireland or whatever with the bards and everything. And that's really, you know, something that's really rich here.
How wonderful for you. It is true that storytelling serves several purposes. You learned your family's history that way, but also that was entertainment. And the best storytellers were mesmerizing, weren't they, Joshua?
They were. You know, my great-grandmother was, she went out west, and her husband was a sheriff in Colorado, and so my grandmother grew up kind of around the beginning of the Depression area in Sterling, Colorado, and she would tell me stories about, it's actually a true story, but it seems weird in retrospect, you know, about my great-grandmother and her family fighting Indians. You know, that's just the life that they had. So you have these, one of the mementos that my grandmother still has is that old 22 rifle that my great grandfather had cut down when he was a sheriff. And it actually had notches in it for, you know, we're not trying to say violence is great, but, you know, you understand that those were different times.
That was protection.
So it had, actually had notches in it for the people that he had to shoot while he was a sheriff.
What a legacy of storytelling, though, and being able to draw back on that rich family history of yours. Did that inspire you to write, and did you begin writing well before you wrote Clear by Fire and now Warning Order?
I did. You know, writing was something that I think is I would say, you know, because as a fan and as a reader, you know, we try to emulate art, you know, and that's kind of the difference between, like, art and artifice when you're looking at something. Now, I don't ever look at myself as an artist. I look at myself as someone who's trying to be a craftsman to learn a skill and to attempt to master it. But I think that from my point of view, it's the next natural step. When you read these stories and, you know, these worlds come alive in you, you want to try to become part of a world in your own way. And, you know, when I was younger, I started doing that by writing stories and then seeking out, you know, my dad at this time had been an advertising director. And so they had copy editors, which were the only writers that I knew at the time. And every now and then they would, you know, I'd get to go up to work and one of those guys would be there and kind of talk about writing, because when I was younger, I was diagnosed with a learning disability besides having ADD, which is what they called it back then. I also had a learning disability, which affected my ability to do math and foreign languages. And somehow what got caught up in that was also grammar. Like, I'm terrible at grammar. If it wasn't for editors and spell checks, you know, my manuscripts look terrible. But, you know, I'd try to learn from these guys, like, hey, how do you, you know, what's a comma or whatever, you know, that's obviously a joke, but, you know, they would tell me early on that it's always about the story. You know, the mechanics of a comma and a period, those can be fixed, but if you can't tell a story, that's kind of what you want to shoot for. If you can't tell a story that makes someone stop what they're doing and listen, then, you know, you're kind of behind the power curve a little bit.
You know, what I noticed is that your storytelling skills are excellent. There, you have no problem there. But something also that's really important to note is that you have very well-defined characters. Your lead characters are very succinctly drawn so that as a reader, I form a bond with your characters, your protagonists. I care what happens to them. I am concerned when they're threatened. I want to know more about the antagonist. I want to know about the bad guy and what makes that person tick. And you really have a knack for setting that up too. So you've got a great story, but not only that, you have people who are telling the story for you as you write. And that's something I think is a very difficult dynamic to hit. It's a symbiotic thing that has to happen for the book to be good, but they're excellent. Now, I'm going to assume, and I shouldn't do that, but I will, because of your military experience, you have a lot of expertise in talking the way things really were. So in your books, you have a level of expertise that not a lot of other people who write military thrillers have. Are any of your stories taken from your real life experiences when you were in the Middle East?
Well, Queer by Fire was really, you know, taken from the Middle East, because the funny thing about Queer by Fire is the genesis of that book came when I was in Afghanistan, and I think I told you this story last time, but
yeah,
we were in the Helmand River Valley at this little place called the Sangin, and I was listening to the radios, and I was listening to these guys on the ground talking to a helicopter, and as the helicopter would fly by, there was a guy in this little compound, and he was shooting at him, and every time the helicopter would fly over, the guy would put down his, you know, his rifle and kind of intermingle with the women. And so, you know, that's where Clear by Fire came from, like the thought, like, what would it take to make a man that was a soldier but had, you know, bigger boundaries, be able to be here right now and do this? Like, what would he look like? What would he think? How would he have, you know, so you have to build that and create that. And obviously I took a lot of from people that I met and people that I knew. And so going from warning order into warning order, all you really have to do is change the locale. You know, the kinetic energy and, you know, the way they speak and everything, it's the same. But the challenge is, as a writer trying to get better at what you do, is that you know, I come from a pretty small milieu. You know, you have 2% of the military is actually the infantry, and when I'm talking about these things, you know, these things are basically second nature, another language almost, but they make sense to me and the people that were in that. Well, what I'm learning now is that you have to expand that. You know, maybe a reader doesn't care too much about, hey, you know, he used this kind of oil on his gun and this type of bullet. That's not really integral to the story. So you have to learn
Correct.
To kind of reach out to more people. And that's, you know, one of the goals that I set for myself with these next books were, how do we make this broader? How do we make this more applicable to everybody? And I think that, you know, Mason Cain is a very interesting character, but Renee is a character that has really captured my imagination. It's funny, she wasn't even supposed to have gone this far into the books, but I see myself more in Renee than I do Mason, which is odd.
It's interesting. I like the character of Renee Hart because she's very strong. She's definitely her own woman, and she definitely has matched her wit with Mason Cain. They are an interesting team together, and I'm curious to see what happens with the next book when it comes out. But for the benefit of those who want to say hello to Joshua, just let me say, we will accept calls in about 5 minutes. If you want to get ready to call in, the number is 347-633-9609. Josh, will you do me a favor and kind of give an overview of Warning Order?
Well, Warning Order, first and foremost, to kind of give a little background, like I started writing Warning Order in 2014. You know, I was still editing and going through that process with Clear by Fire, but what was interesting was, you know, ISIS had kind of started its metastasization in Syria and into Iraq, and, you know, you're on the news and paying attention to this and that because, you know, I'm interested in what's happening still over there, and, you know, they weren't getting any real credence. You know, they were called JV teams and all this stuff, so you know, I set about, in my mind, because the warning signs in my mind were all there, you know, it was this perfect storm just kind of waiting. It was like, you know, it was just this massive brush fire just waiting on some lightning to go up. And so I thought to myself, like, how would I tell a story that was very, you know, relevant to that? And, you know, I didn't know at the time that ISIS would be around by the time the book came out, but nobody was writing about them at the time. So what I wanted to do was I really wanted to take the reader and put them right in the middle of combat. And I know that that's a double-edged sword because sometimes when you write like that, people are like, oh, this is so violent. This is so, you know, terrible. But everything in that book is real, and I wanted it to be as gritty and unflinching as possible. I wanted it to reach out to veterans who've been there and say, you know, hey, this is something that, you know, you can relate to and something that you might have done and you had that shame about whatever you did, or you come back and you feel a certain way. There's nothing to be ashamed about. And so I wrote this book to kind of cover not only a very flawed hero, but a very flawed situation. And so basically it's a, you know, it's a look at the war on terror, specifically the fight against ISIS, and it's following Mason Cain as he deals with a very base emotion, which is revenge, and then a very, you know, sublime and overarching emotion, which is duty. And so how would a person like that, you know, balance both of those?
The story is so well told and the plot is so tight that I had a difficult time putting the book down. I wanted to connect the dots easily, but you can't. I would imagine that just as in real life, you cannot connect the dots that easily. There's not one answer or one response for this type of war. You really, really worked it well, I have to say. And by the way, this is release day, isn't it?
It is.
So congratulations. Joshua Hood's warning order is live today. I hope that everyone who hears this is going to buy this book immediately. And by the way, when you go to your retailer, make sure you look for the first book called Clear by Fire. You explained very succinctly last time you were on the show what Clear by Fire actually meant. Will you repeat it and then tell me if warning order is another one of those military terms that you decided to use? So what does clear by fire mean?
Clear by fire is a term we use in the infantry, and we have basically what would be considered a textbook that when you come into the infantry, you come to an infantry unit, you're basically learning your job. You have a textbook there that tells you how to do the things, and each one of those things is called a battle drill. And part of one of those battle drills is called clear by fire, and it's basically you're clearing an objective by moving into it and closing with and destroying the enemy. And a warning order is what they call an operation order. And basically an officer, when a command comes down, like, hey, we want you to do this, a commanding officer will issue a warning order that basically says, hey, we're going here, and we're going to accomplish this. And it's very basic. It's very neat and tight, but it's open for interpretation, and that's what the officer wants. Your commanding officer wants you to, if it's coming from a general, he wants the colonel to set the plan and say, hey, this is actually what we're going to do, and use his expertise to make it happen. And so I thought it was a fitting title because, you know, you're kind of moving into this unknown enemy. And so Mason is in this position where he's told to do something, but how he would accomplish that is left up to him.
And therein lies the rub, because you bring back a character from Clear by Fire who happens to be his pal, and there's a little ambiguity about what's going on with his buddy. And then enters in Renee Hart, who again is a fascinating character, and I will be really excited to see if you take on the challenge of writing from her perspective. I think that would be fascinating. I want to remind everybody I'm speaking to best-selling author Joshua Hood. He writes military thrillers. They're fantastic. Today is release day for Warning Order, and I've read it. It's a 5-star read. There's no doubt about it. Joshua is a decorated military veteran who's been in Iraq and in Afghanistan and probably other places he can't even tell us, which is fine with me. He now is a SWAT officer in Memphis, Tennessee, but has worked stateside operations with the FBI, ATF, DEA, Secret Service, and the U.S. Marshals. So he pretty much knows his way around law enforcement, which is a lovely thing. If you'd like to speak to Josh, please give us a call at 347-633-9609. So you're getting all these accolades for your terrific writing, and I'm really happy for you. You've already started the third book. Can you give us a little teaser about what it will be about?
Well, with the third book, I'm trying to close this arc that I began with Clear by Fire, and some people are going to be in it for a short time, and some people are going to be in it for a longer time. But what interested me the most was seeing Mason and Renee and that relationship that they have developed. What is it? You know, both of them have something that they need. Both of them are, in a way, broken and kind of battered by the war, but in a lot of ways they seem like they are each other's counterpoints. But can two people that are so strong and have seen all they've seen and have been, you know, on their own, can they come together and, you know, find something that they need from each other? And so that's what the crux of it. And obviously we'll have quite a few, you know, explosions and gunfights and everything, but, you know, I want to turn it down a little bit with the constant set pieces and action, you know, taking the front seat. And I really want to go inside Mason, and I want to go inside Renee and inside Zeus and explain these things that make them tick. So maybe we have a richer kind of narrative there.
The interesting thing to me, Joshua, is that from clear by fire to warning order, you've peeled back a little bit of the layers of both of them. We see a little bit more about what makes them tick, but not everything. You've not opened the book completely on them. You also have shown how they are able to think fast on their feet, which I think is critical because these are your protagonists in your book, and they really are guiding the story. So while we learn a little bit more about each of them, it will be interesting to see how you set up the third book. Do you have a working title for that book yet?
So far, it's called Countermeasures.
Ah, interesting. Very interesting. And you're thinking about your fourth book already, aren't you?
Well, you know, I have a fourth book in mind, but at the same time, you know, I think that as I go on, you know, Renee has kind of demanded her own attention. So I think, you know, we'll finish one more with Mason and crew, and then I think I'd like to work on one where we see what would happen, where Renee would go. You know, I'm fascinated by her character. And, you know, the interesting thing about Countermeasures is, you know, we have a lot of base emotions, very primal emotions like revenge, hate, anger, all those things. And, you know, it's easy to be a, you know, a dragon slayer, as it was, if you're not worried about going home. But what happens if you do go home? And then what happens on top of that if, you know, you suddenly have an emotion awakening inside of you that you haven't felt before, and you care about somebody on a level that, you know, that you haven't before. You know, imagine taking, you know, your loved one into a firefight. Like, what would that do? What would that do when you feel like you need to protect a woman, but a woman doesn't need your protection? How would a strong woman respond to a guy trying to, you know, treat her, you know, almost like she's, you know, like she needs to be taken care of? And so those are things that interest me in telling this this next book and this next story.
Interesting. I love it. Do you think as you continue writing, you will continue to write military thrillers or law enforcement, maybe if you lean more toward Renee, because she's with the DOD? So I don't know if it'll always be involved in the war. Probably it will, some type of war. Or are you interested in maybe switching up the type of thriller that you want to write? Has that ever interest you?
Well, Renee's book, and, you know, this might cost readers, but Renee's book will not be a military thriller. And when I pitched it, you know, they want that quick, succinct, you know, elevator pitch. And so, you know, I told them simply, you know, imagine a female Jack Reacher. Imagine a softer Jack Reacher. You know, what would that look like in the United States, knowing what she has known? And, you know, maybe going into a situation where she's not in the military and she's working in the United States and the rules of engagement change. And we get to see, you know, not only what Renee, you know, can do. We've seen what she can do with the pistol and everything else. But, like, let's see how smart and how driven and how, you know, motivated Renee is on her own. Like, I'm really, you know, kind of drawn to turning that bit of the genre upside down with, you know, the strong male and, you know, this caricature of females that just kind of swoon when they're kissed. Like, you know, what would it look like the other way? What would it look like with a strong woman and these men are coming up to her and asking for help?
I love that. I have to tell you, as a female, I love that. And I will look forward to that type of a book. Have you ever thought about writing out of thrillers? Maybe going into something like, I don't know, fantasy, science fiction? Have you ever had an interest in doing anything like that?
Well, when I was one of the first books I ever attempted to write, and when I was little, I actually still have the notebook, was a science fiction type fantasy book. And, you know, that's what's awesome about being a writer, and that's one of the reasons I always looked up to Michael Crichton so much, because, you know, writing a series is hard. It's, you know, it's very, you know, people are like, oh, you leave the ending open or whatever, but that's what they do on TV. That's what keeps you wanting to pay attention next year. And Michael Crichton was great because, you know, he took these ideas, and, you know, he was just this Renaissance man that took these ideas. Like, hey, let's talk about, you know, an apex predator. Let's talk about humans versus, I don't know, dinosaurs. Or let's talk about, you know, he wrote a book about pirates. He wrote a book about time travel. He wrote all these different books and made them relevant.
Right.
And, you know, so it's kind of like being a writer. When you get to that point where you're allowed to write what you want, the whole world kind of opens up, and you're allowed to take chances, and maybe, you know, writing within a thriller genre, you have to obey these kind of rules. But, you know, once you step free of that, you can kind of go back to that childlike wonder that I had, you know, listening to my dad read where these stories come alive.
It's interesting that you say that, because I think I would say a good 80% of thriller novelists that I speak to all say they have a great interest in science fiction too. And I think that's because science fiction is a thrill also. It is a thriller in itself, where maybe every thriller isn't science fiction, but science fiction itself is a thrilling adventure, isn't it?
Well, I look at, you know, American literature kind of in the way of mythology, because as America, we're such a young culture. We don't have, you know, these, you know, you take the Greeks and the Romans, and they have this mythos that makes up who they were, and then they, you know, they carry that into everything they are, and they're living around these ruins that were, you know, thousands of years old in the beginning of civilization.
Sure.
You know, in America, we had the West, and, you know, as we progressed to, you know, the coast, and, you know, we kind of ended our boundaries, and we weren't really into this, a huge colonial thing like, you know, the Europeans were. And so when you look at science fiction and fantasy, it's like, you know, it's like going to the Congo, like the, you know, I think in Heart of Darkness, Conrad talks about, you know, he had a fascination with maps. But back then, maps, there were places on the map that were just blank. It was just a blob of green or blue. And we don't have that anymore. But in science fiction, you do. You have this canvas that's just open, and it says, hey, what do you want to put out there?
There are no boundaries, right? There are no boundaries. It's whatever the boundary of your imagination is. And hopefully for a writer, it's limitless. It's unlimited. It goes on and on and on. I would love to see you write something like that when you're ready for it. I think it would be tons of fun. How's everything in your life? Are you happy at what you're doing right now? Is your goal to be a full-time writer?
Yeah, that is my goal. And, you know, it's one of those things where, you know, you look at, like I said, and, you know, I've read Stephen Pressfield's book, you know, The War of Art, and he talks about, you know, art versus artifice. We talked about that a little bit earlier. And so, you know, when you have a full-time job, and, you know, I wake up at 5 every day to write. You know, I've done that since I first started writing seriously in 2013. You know, I haven't had a day off from writing since then. And, you know, but I have a job. So when that phone rings, or, you know, they're like, hey, this is overtime, and, you know, you're on that roll, and you have to stop and put it down, and maybe a month or two passes, and you can only write, you know, an hour or so a day. You know, the freedom that comes with being a full-time writer is something I think everyone dreams about. But at the same time, you know, it's one of those things where you still have to keep the lights on at the house. And so
absolutely,
I use my writing and my dreams kind of like a fire. You know, I use it to keep everything burning hot inside of me. You know, that's why I give 110% to a book. And, you know, some writers that I've talked to, you know, guys that have commented on the back of these books and blurbs, you know, they say, well, I don't ever read my reviews, I don't do that. But, you know, honestly, I do, because when you read, you know, I shouldn't say I do. I don't read the positive ones, but I do read the negative ones, because I believe that everybody who reads a book, they're going to come away with something. If somebody's like, this book's terrible, that doesn't really tell me anything. But if someone says, this book's terrible because the ending wasn't good, you know, I listen to that, because I know that I'm fallible, and I need to push myself to get better and learn more and to write tighter and do everything. And so I always want to be able to put forth a book And you know not everybody's going to like it, but to put forth a book that, you know, no one can ever say, hey, this guy phoned this in.
Well, I agree with you. I think that it's important to, you know, I'm looking at someone who gave you a 1-star for a warning order, and all they said was wild story, weird ending. And I think that's really funny, but there is some truth to be had if you winnow through the less favorable reviews and see if you find common thread. Because the people who love you are going to love you. They're not dissecting a book maybe as often much, or they are. But there are sometimes, you know, if you're seeing the same thing over and over again, you really kind of have to pay attention to it. But you have to also have a thick skin. You can't let that review say, oh, well, I'm just crap and I'm never writing again. Because the best people, the Stephen Kings of the world, still get bad reviews. It just is a matter of life. There are people who live to tear down, you know, one sentence who don't get it. That's okay. But if someone gives you constructive criticism and you don't read, how will you ever know? How will you ever know if there's something constructive there, right? So,
right.
Good
and
on
I love
you.
Bad reviews because, you know, it's kind of like throwing another log on the fire. You know, it keeps me sharp and on the edge. But, you know, that's sometimes the only interaction I'll have with a fan is, or a person who read it is like, hey, you did this and it wasn't good. I didn't like it, you know. And like you said, you know, the ones that are like, this book just was bad. Like, I brushed that off. But when somebody says something or two people says something, then I'm like, you know what? You're right. I did. I fell short there, but it won't happen again.
Right.
Because there might be better writers out there. Like, one of my mottos is, there might be better writers out there, but there's nobody out there who's going to outwork me.
Well, there you go. And that says a lot. You know, failure to even one person, it's a great feature, isn't it, Joshua? I think it's really critical.
It is, and I've learned more from my failures than I ever have from any success. You know, success is
sure. Sometimes,
I guess, will be easy and fleeting, but I think that, you know, success, I mean, failure is just a very honest teacher.
Yeah. Yeah, it's wonderful for you to always have great reviews, and if every single book was book review was 5 stars across the board, I don't think you have a lot to shoot for after that, except, you know, to make another 5-star book. And how do you do that without critical feedback? I don't know if you can. I'm not a writer, so I don't know. Only you know in your heart what motivates you to be better and better each time. By the way, what do the other police officers that you work with think about your writing?
I think it's one of those things where, you know, one of the things that started me writing seriously is when I was in the military, I had a squad leader, and he outranked me, but he hadn't gone to college or anything like that, and I was enlisted. And he used to enjoy, you know, when they break people into the Army, it's kind of one of those things where you kind of go through this hazing, so you can't do anything right. But, you know, one of the things that he used to joke about is, oh, you went to college to be a writer? Like, that was the most worthless thing ever. And so as we went to Iraq and everything and our relationship kind of deepened, you know, after obviously being at war, you know, we talked more about books and movies and, you know, things like this. And in 2013, I got an email from him, and he said, hey, I just wrote my first book. And so it was one of those things where, you know, like we talked about failure, I don't believe in failure as anything other than something that teaches me how to do something. You know, Edison once said, you know, when they asked for a light bulb, he's like, I didn't fail 1,000 times. I just found 1,000 times it didn't work. And the only time someone fails, in my opinion, is when you don't
Right.
Yeah, you know, or if you never start. You know, they talk about, you know,
if you talk about it and then
writing,
don't do it. Sure.
But you look at, like, writing, and a lot of people want to look at it as, like, this ivory tower where you have these, like, elite people that are born with this some, like, you know, arcane knowledge that, you know, mere mortals can never figure out. And that's not the way it is, you know. It's, you know, perspiration will always beat inspiration. And it's one of those things where if you're willing to work at it, this is America. You can do whatever you want to do. The only thing that's ever going to limit you is yourself. And so, you know, when I got that, when he sent me that email and I looked up the book, I was like, you know, Josh, there's a reason that you've always thought about writing. And, you know, I think that you find your calling when, you know, you finally find that silence when you're doing something. You know, you might be at work. You know, like, I wish I was doing this or whatever. I've never sat down in front of the keyboard and thought I'd rather be doing something else, ever.
Interesting.
And I think that so, once I figured that out, I was like, this is what I was meant to do.
Interesting. The guys that you work with in the police department, are they respectful of your choice to be a writer? Or do they tease you?
I don't really think they care too much. I think that, you know, the type of personality that typically does this job is, you know, an alpha type person who's loud and whatever.
Sure.
But, you know, you also have that other side where a lot of great artists and poets and people like that were warriors because they see, you know, the carnage, but they also see, you know, the beauty in the little things. And so, yeah, they respect and support what I'm doing. I just don't think not many of them are that big a reader. So they're just like, man, why couldn't you like do something cool, like act in movies so I can meet movie stars or something.
You need to bring them books while they're waiting around for a call or something and say, here, read when you're staked out or something, whatever it is. I know from when I follow you on Facebook, sometimes you're saying, my God, I've been laying up on this roof for hours and nothing's happened. And now we're closing down the op and we're going home. And I'm thinking, see, you only had a Kindle. There you go. Although I know you can't divert your attention. I jest about that. But I'm glad that they're supportive of you. And I'm also glad that you came back to talk to me. It's great speaking to you. Like you said earlier, it's like coming home. It is. It's old home week for me when I know you're coming on the show and we have a chance to talk. I hope you'll come back again. I'll demand that you come back again.
Well, you know I will. I think that we always we talk way too much to let people call in because we just, you know, just enjoy each other's company. If we get where you're on the radio.
I think you're right. I think that you're right. And I'm honored that you're here. And I'm very proud to be your friend and to know you. And congratulations on your successes. I know Warning Order is going to be a big hit the same way Clear by Fire was. And, you know, I may run a contest during the week and see if anyone wants a copy of the book. And there we go. That'd be nice, wouldn't it? To give away
great.
A copy. All right, I might do that.
That would be great.
All right. My friend, I wish you all the best. And you and I will be speaking again, especially the next time you come to Florida. We'll have to rendezvous if we can. And I get to meet your family and just spend some time chatting, okay?
Well, I appreciate it as always. Thanks for having me on.
I'm so glad you were here. Joshua Hood's book is Warning Order. Today is release day. I urge you to go, if you like thrillers, go and pick up this book, but be smart and pick up Clear by Fire first, because they are just in lockstep with each other. Two terrific books that you won't want to stop reading. Joshua, thank you, my friend, and have a great 4th of July, and thank you for all your service to this country.
Well, thank you for everything, and thank you for believing in both these books and for me and having me on.
You got it, my friend. Talk to you soon. Good night.
All right. Bye-bye.
So tomorrow morning at 11 o'clock, I'm speaking to Roxanne St. Clair about her Basic Bay Timeless trilogy. Oh, what a fabulous writer. I can't wait to talk to her. Have a good night, everyone. Grab Joshua Hood's book, Warning Order. Thank you so much for being with me, and thank you, Mom and Dad. Good night.